Who else found something interesting in this exploration?
Your first question, or the first list we compiled, was a list of commitments we had made that we had to follow through with. And in trying to put that together, I had discovered that, quite to my chagrin, that I didn't have very many out there. I basically had none. And looking at what was underneath that was a whole lot of fear, because I do take them very seriously and follow through on them. And
well, how can you take them very seriously and follow through on them if you have none out there?
Because of past ones that I've had to live with and follow and commit to and do, that right now I've structured my life in a way that I don't have many commitments out there.
I see.
For promises that I've made
to
follow through.
Yeah, I got it. What is scary about that for you, noticing that you don't have that many commitments out there?
I'm not engaged in life very much if I'm not putting any promises out there that I have to live up to. I don't appear to be playing the game fully.
I think that you can cure this habit you've fallen into of not making promises by holding the experience of promising things in a new way. What I've done is I've recontextualized or redefined what a promise is. I've decided that I am going to make choices and announce my intentions, and in that way fully engage life, but that I will continue to make very, very few what I would call promises, because a promise is a statement that I will not change my mind about this. And I can't make that statement and be true to myself. I will not make that statement, because it is a giving away to you of my own future. And I can't give you my future. I can only give you my now. In my now, I can even tell you what my intention is for the future. Now, you may think we're splitting hairs here, but we're not. It's larger than just semantics. I can tell you my intention for the future, but I cannot promise you that I will never, ever, ever change my mind about that. Now, the person who begins to retreat from making promises frequently retreats also from even making intentions known or making choices clear, because they confuse them as being one and the same thing. And so they can't even go so far as to say, I choose you now and I intend to have a relationship with you forever. They can't even go there, because it sounds too much like a promise. And it carries all the emotional baggage of a promise. Yet it doesn't have to. And so what I'm suggesting that you do is to recontextualize your experience of what it is you're actually doing there, and to engage life fully by being honest about what your choices and decisions and intentions for the future are in this moment.
I think what was happening for me was that I have a lot of intentions, and I hadn't energized them with the word promise to myself, even about those intentions, because there is a lot of energy that goes behind a promise.
Yes.
And I was unwilling to make them because of fear of failure. That's the reassessment of my decisions that I want to, you know,
good,
reevaluate.
Good. I encourage you and invite you to do that, and I invite you to do it within a new context within which you find that it's not necessary to turn an intention into a promise, but that it being an intention is strong enough, and let that be the fuel of your experience. Life proceeds out of your intentions for it. That's straight out of book one. Life proceeds out of your intentions for it. Did anybody have an aha when you started writing down commitments that you made and broke? I had a couple of ahas when I thought of that, yes.
Well, in the second part where you said to write down commitments that we've made and broken, when I looked at them and I went a little bit further and looked at what I thought the ultimate reason was why I broke all the commitments that I had broken, was because in order to keep that commitment, I couldn't be true to myself. I couldn't grow and discover who I was and still stay within that commitment. And yet, on the next list, when there was the one part about the one that you regret, keeping a commitment, the one thing that I wrote down was the last 4 years of my marriage, because I knew I shouldn't be there. But but I stayed because I wanted to keep the commitment.
You wanted to keep the commitment, yes. Yeah.
But I didn't listen to what was inside. And that's what was telling me not to be there, you know.
Yes. I had marriages that I committed to and that failed one after the other. Several of them. And then I got into one and I decided that this one would not fail. And so with teeth gritting determination, I hung in there. And I found out that I had created a situation in which I was committed to the commitment. Not even to that person anymore. Not even to myself. I was simply committed to the commitment. See? And so I hung in there long past the time when I should have, out of a thought that I have to learn how to keep commitments in my life. Well, in fact, that wasn't a false thought. I did have to learn how to keep commitments in my life. And the first commitment that I had to keep was my commitment to myself, to be authentic. And that was what I talked about in one of our previous sessions. I had been willing to be inauthentic in order to keep you in the room. And I called that my commitment. I'll keep you in the room by any device, even if I have to lie through my teeth to hold you there. And really what we're discussing here is our willingness to tell and be the truth. That's what we're talking about. That's why this is called the Truth Seminar. Do you see how this all revolves around the same question? If we are just willing to speak our truth, then the relationships we have with other people reshape and reform themselves in one way or another. They sometimes get stronger, and they sometimes change in other ways and turn into other forms. By the way, a relationship never ends. It simply changes form. Your relationship with another never ends. But it might look a different way on the morrow. How many of you felt that in some way or another your life would change if it were true? Nobody owes me anything. Good. Can you tell us how you think your life would change?
I think that that is a true statement. We don't owe anybody anything, and they don't owe us anything. We have opportunities in life that if we see other people in need, we have an opportunity to act on that based on our choice of love. But it's an opportunity. It's not a responsibility.
Or an obligation.
It's not an obligation, no. It's just an opportunity. You can choose to act, and you can choose not to act.
Now let me ask you a question. Do you really believe what you've just said?
Yes.
Terrific. Do you have a business?
Yes, I'm a dentist.
Oh, wow, that's great. What percentage of your patients refuses to ever pay its bill?
There's a percent.
What do you do about those people? Do they owe you that money?
We need to keep the conversation going. Why do they feel that way?
What if they simply say, I can't pay you. I thought I could give you this $1,500 to put in my new bridge. But I've decided that I'm going to marry my secretary and we're going off to the Bahamas. And I need the $1,500 to escape my wife. See, I know what he wants me to say is they can't afford it because their mother just died and they have to bury her. And then he could be a real nice guy and say, in that case, I'd probably forgive it. So I'm trying to come up with the worst case scenario. The most flippant reason for not paying the bill that you could imagine. I'm running away with someone to have an illicit affair, and I've decided not to pay your bill. Now, do I owe you the money?
Well, I haven't come into that situation quite yet.
You haven't had me as a patient.
No, I have not. But I, you know, for whatever their reason is at the moment, it's still a commitment on your part. I provided the service.
I understand. Now, but do I owe you the money?
Yes. You received the service. You still have the capability to
pay. But you said that nobody owes you anything. I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just noticing what feels like a contradiction. That's why I asked you a minute ago, do you really believe that? See, what you really believed was you were very strong about I don't owe anyone else anything. You said if I see someone there who needs help, I'm not obligated to give them help. If I want to, I can, but so forth. And you were real clear about that. And I asked you, do you really believe that? And you said, yes, I believe what I've just said. Nobody owes us anything, and we don't owe anyone else anything. And now I've asked you how that works as a practical matter on the ground in your life, you see. And suddenly I'm hearing something different. I asked you, do I owe you that? And you answered, yes. See, it's tough. It's very difficult. Because we really do want to feel that people owe us something when we've done something, particularly if we've provided a service, and particularly if there is an implicit or explicit agreement in the space. And the agreement to stay in a marriage or to stay in a relationship or to go fishing on Saturday is no different from any other agreement. It's just that the agreement you're now discussing has to do with greenbacks, dollars in your pocket, as opposed to an agreement to go fishing on Saturday with the guys or whatever other agreements we may be talking about. But in my mind, it's all the same stuff. It's all the same thing. And in my mind, if nobody owes you anything, then they literally don't owe you anything. They don't owe it to you to keep any agreement, including an agreement explicitly made with you to exchange their money for your services. Now, I know a guy in business who had, he was running about 5 to 7% non-payments, and he was dunning and doing all the things that people do. And then he came to one of my retreats. True story. He came to one of my retreats, went back to his business and composed a new letter. He sent me a copy of it. Letter said, "Dear so-and-so, I am writing you this letter to tell you that you don't owe me anything. I notice that you have an outstanding balance of $1,436 and that you haven't paid on that balance in a very long time. However, I want you to know that you do not owe it to me to give me this money because I assume you've had a reason which is good and sufficient in your own life not to do so, and I would never force you to do anything that you don't want to or feel you can't do. I would only choose to receive your money if you saw me as a person worthy of receiving it, as a person to whom you want to give it. Therefore, if you do not want to give me your money, and if what I have done for you is not enough to cause you to wish to give me your money, please don't do so." Of those letters he sent out, 73% returned money. Higher percentage than any Dunning agency had ever achieved for him. Isn't that wonderful?
Yes.
You see, the truth is, when you put people again at choice in the creation of who they are, they will choose the highest version of themselves, more often than not. But what causes people to shrink from expressing the highest part of themselves is your requirement that they have to. I just said a mouthful there. Yes, sir.
I believe, if I believe that I don't owe anybody anything, that that lets me alleviate people-pleasing behavior, which lets me, when I do give, I give without resentment and without condition.
Wow. Yeah, that's a great truth. You've spoken a great truth for me. That's my truth for sure. Thank you. I can act without resentment and also without fear. See, also when we realize that no one owes us anything, we can act without fear because the fear, of course, that we hold is that we will not get a return on our investment. That's the fear. And when we no longer require a return on our investment, we can act fearlessly. Imagine what would happen in our society if we lived in a place where no one was forced to do anything they didn't choose to do. I once had a lady, a rather well-known lady in this country. She's fairly famous. And I had done some work for her years ago, and I never got paid. And I remember my friends saying to me, because I was chatting about this, "Well, why don't you just go to a lawyer and file a claim, file a suit?" And I said, "You know, I don't want dirty money. Maybe I would win that suit and I might get that money." It was not a small amount. We're not talking about $200 or $300 here. It was a fairly large amount of money. But I said, "You know, if I have to go to court and have some guy wrap a gavel and force her to give me this money, I might in fact get it. But oh, would it be dripping with energy. See, and all of life is about energy. See, it's not about physical stuff. It's about energy. And I don't want any of that drippy, yucky, icky energy attaching itself to me. Not in the form of money that someone doesn't want to give me, or love that someone doesn't want to give me, or sex that someone doesn't want to give me. Did you ever have sex with somebody who didn't want you to have it with them? Did you ever have that happen in your life? And somewhere in the middle of it, I was like, what happened to this? What's going wrong here? You know, who wants that kind of energy? Whoa. So, I have a suggestion. Release and let go today of any thought of anything that anyone owes you. Blow it away. Release it. Let it go. And if you have the courage, do more than let it go in your mind. Actually communicate that to the other person. Just tell them, I release you. You don't owe me this. You don't owe me anything. And see how you feel. See how you feel about yourself after that and about your life.